Carol Lake of Stitch Play Designs departed from us on January 5. If we can have legends in the needle arts community, Carol certainly was one. Her designs and books, solo or with her needlework partner Michael Boren, are some of the best we've seen, and owning some or all of her books is almost essential for needlepointers. In addition to writing and designing, her classes were always in high demand. She achieved so much and gave so much to the needle arts community, and we'll all miss her, especially her family and stitching friends. To honor and remember Carol, this week we replay the Fiber Talk conversation we had with her in June 2018. Thank you, Carol, and rest in peace. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for people who play with needles. We do have with us, from Stitch Play Designs, Carol Lake. Hi, Carol.
Hi, how are you?
Doing all right. Thanks for joining us today, this week, whenever, sometime.
Well, I love talking about needlepoint or needlework in general, so.
Yes, well, we can talk about needlepoint all you want, because I love it. So, yay for that. So, yeah, all right. Well, first question, I got to get this in right out of the gate, because it's first on my mind. And that's, as you may or may not know, I'm working on Anasazi. Is it Anasazi Song?
Yeah, I saw that on Facebook.
Yes.
You're doing a great job.
Well, thanks. Thoroughly enjoying it. Nice little challenge. And lots of mindless stitching, too. It's a nice combination.
Well, that's my métier. Once I get tired of the complicated stuff, then I have to put a boring border on it so that I don't get missed.
Well, that's exactly what, when I finish the center section in that, all right, now what's next? Oh, just mindless. Turn on the TV and just do it. So I'm really enjoying it. But then I did not know, because I got this one out of, the story is I got an old issue. I was in a store and just bought a back issue of Needlepoint Now. And it had, I think, the second installation in it.
Yeah.
I thought, oh, I got to have that. So then, I was traveling a lot at the time. So I was hitting needlework stores till I got the other two issues and had the set. So then I could do it and stitch it. And, you know, stupid me, I could have looked and probably bought the chart from you, but I didn't think like that. I thought,
not back then. Yeah, we were doing magazines back then.
Okay, so I had that one, and then it was a while. I bought all the threads, and they sat in a bag, and then I decided, well, I'm stitching that thing. And then I discovered that you have two, what is it, Dream and Spirit are the other two.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And they're all joined by the colors. They're on different colors of canvas, but all of them have the Arabian Nights watercolors in them.
Oh, that's the base, huh?
Get them to change the name of Arabian Nights to Anasazi Nights, but they just wouldn't do it for me.
Uncooperative dyers.
I used a lot of it. You'd think they would appreciate that, but no. But I love those colors.
Yeah, well, yeah. So that's the basis, because I've not studied the other two, other than I know I have to get them and stitch them. But that's
they have
the basis.
Doubles in them.
I see that now. Yes, I don't care. They're, you know, double fan doubles, but Walnetto's here in the Spirit one, right?
Well, yes, that's true. That's true.
Those test my patience.
But those do they now? Well, I thought they were fun. And they don't take very long to stitch. I never get giant pieces because I get bored after a 10x14 is just about all I can manage. And then I'm tired of it. I want to go into a different piece.
Yeah.
Some people work on pieces and they stay and they work and they work and they work and they work. Rugs. People do rugs. You know, I'm more of a box top girl.
So the question I have is, where does this idea start? What was the inspiration for this? And what made you do three? Was it this Arabian Night thread, or did you have some design in mind? Or
it was because I'd seen a rug. My husband's from Arizona, and I had seen a rug out there, and I thought that would make a really nice needlepoint project.
Oh.
So I came home and drew and did stuff, and originally it was supposed to be bigger, but I got to that. Sometimes you just get to the point where you say, this is good. This is ready. So if you look at it, you can see that it's got those little tassely looking things at each end. And so that's its sort of rug basis. So the other, exactly the same size with those. I started with the outline, so they'd be exactly the same size, and then did different things in the middle.
But, okay. So that's what, because I wondered where those tassel things came from. So that's from, okay.
Yeah. But people are always saying, there's going to be a series. And I'm going, sure, put your check right here. There'll be a series. Yeah, but they do. It was interesting because the just changing the color of the canvas changes the way they look. You could probably do that first one, Anasazi's Song, on the three different colors of canvas, and people might not realize it was the same thing.
Yeah. Well, it is that the song that I'm doing now. It is that nice combination. There's a nice challenge in the center. Working with the different fibers and that netted stretchy stuff. What's that called?
The flare.
Yeah, flare. You know, always a challenge anyway. And getting that center just right, and then to be able to just do some mindless framework around it. And then now, yeah, those fringes at the top and the bottom, now that I know where they came from, it'll help me with see that. And then the flare, being careful you don't snag it.
Oh, yeah.
Later on. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if you snag it, that's just not good at all.
No.
But I think there's flare, if I can't remember exactly, but I think there's flare in all three of them. Because I use a lot of Rainbow Gallery threads because it's when you get another card of it, it's very close to the same color, same dialogue. Whereas with watercolors, which the Arabian Nights is, it could look a little bit different.
Yeah.
I really like Rainbow Gallery threads in general. Well, I like all the threads. I like silk and ivory. I used to, when it first came out, I wanted to fill up the bathtub with it and just lay on it. It was so soft.
Well, and that's, you've been at this business long enough. You've seen that movement from wool on 13 point all the way to all the threads. You've seen it all. Yeah.
My first painted canvases were patterned on just plain on painted canvases and so forth. And I would go into the shop and I would buy all the threads, and then I'd package it up. Later, I realized you don't have to buy all the threads when you first get it because you may never stitch it. I have a few unfinished projects. A few dozen.
Just a few, huh?
Just a few.
Just a room full.
Just a room full. Well, maybe two rooms. My kids moved out, so maybe two rooms full.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
My son always said he could hear them. They were in the closet that backed up to his room, and he said he could hear them scratching on the wall looking for more room.
Expand to fill the space.
That's right.
Well, yeah, because that's when I started was wool on painted canvas. Same thing. And I started when I was in college, and of course, buying that stuff I shouldn't be spending this money on this. I should be spending it on beer, you know, but what's wrong with me?
But, well, if you're careful, you can have both.
Yes. Now I have both beer and
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
I have a whole hallway upstairs of my earlier stitching. And my son calls it the wall of shame. He says that the older a project gets, is the more likely it is to move up the stairs where people won't see it. I can't get rid of them.
Yeah, right. No, of course not. How did you get started? What was it a thing when you were a child? How did you get even to pick up a needle?
I think it was when I was in college. I did crewel work at first. Somebody bought me a kit or bought a kit and gave it to me. And I haven't had a needle out of my hand for very long since then. my mother always thought it was the craziest thing ever. She said, "What are you doing?"
Oh, she didn't stitch, huh?
She was not a stitcher. No, my grandmothers were quilters, but I never got into quilting. So, but I started doing it, and I'd go to the shop and then after I started staying home with the babies for a while but I was a school teacher. I taught foreign languages in junior high for some years, and I missed the teaching, but I didn't want to go back to work because that's what I have my husband for, is to work. So I
let's see, wait, I got to note that in the ledger here.
And I, I went down to one of the shops in town and said, I wouldn't mind teaching some classes. And they were like, would you not? And it just kind of went downhill from there. My first pieces, this is about 1985, before you were born. And my first pieces were on Lugana and linen and things like that. And then I discovered needlepoint, and it was like, oh my gosh, this is wonderful. I love needlepoint canvas. I love stitching on it. I love the way the it's like you've got a grid there, and even whether it's counted or painted, you've got, the stitches go just where you want them to. And I fell in love with it. And the next thing you know, I had a stash the size of probably one of the national armories. But I like the teaching, and so I got into the teaching, and I got involved with ANG and EGA, and I did EGA teacher certification in the late 80s, and because I thought that would help me get jobs to teach, which it probably doesn't. But back in the day, but I met a lot of people, and once you know people, they think, oh, we ought to get that woman. What was her name again? And the next thing you know, I'd have a little teaching job here, a little teaching job there, and the next thing you know, you're teaching for regionals, and then you're teaching for nationals, and then you're traveling all over the place, and then you have to think up all these patterns, these original patterns, and
Is that what prompted the design aspect of what you do is looking for fresh things to teach?
And my first, I don't think my first pieces were particularly innovative, but in fact, they were nasty, lousy, but then I began to, you began to do it more, and I began to see more, and I took classes all along, because if you take classes, you learn something every time. And I started learning more, and then I took some design classes and some color classes, and then about the time I got to Anasazi Song, then I began to feel like my stuff looked better. I look back at the first things I did, and they're very stiff. It was like I didn't have any motion or any, and sometimes I wasn't as good with the color as I would like to be. So those are all upstairs in the Hall of Shame now. I keep the good ones downstairs. But I taught here in the shops in Austin, and I taught, around, and I really liked the teaching. I retired, oh, 2 or 3 years ago from the teaching because it got to be too hard to travel around and that sort of thing. But I still miss it. So I did online classes, and I really liked that. I did them for the Shining Needle Society, and I probably taught 10 or 15 classes for her, for Kate Gaunt, and then I got together with Michael Boren, and we started Stitch Play Designs. And then he retired last year, but we did some things together, and that was really nice, because when we had both of our brains going at it, we got some did some things that I think are the best things I've ever stitched on, because you sit there and look at, and he'd put something in, and I'd say, that looks terrible, and so he'd fix it, and then I'd put something in, and he said, that's just bad. And we do it again. And a couple of pieces that we had, some of our bigger pieces, we actually stitched twice and I would go out to his house, and we'd move things around. It was really nice having somebody to work with like that.
So how did you connect with him? How did that come to be, that partnership?
Well, we met each other. We'd known each other for a while, going to different seminars, and he was, I always knew who he was because he was a guy, and there aren't that many. And
Yeah, true that, yes.
and so we just got to be buddies, and we taught some classes together, some canvas embellishment classes together, and that was fun because he the way we did it was I would sit there and I would think up stitches for people to do, and then he would run down to the shop and help him pick threads. It was so nice to have two people, but his partner is older now, and he felt like he needed to retire, and so I bought the business from him about 6 months ago, and to my amazement, it's still going on. I really like doing designs, and I even like selling them even better.
So that I didn't realize it was that recent that he retired.
Yeah. Well, I think he intended to retire the year before, but I suckered him into doing a little bit more because we started writing books because we began to think there are a lot of needlework books out there. You certainly don't need every one of them, but a lot of them are just stitch books. There's nothing there but stitches. And so we decided we wanted to write a book like from our canvas embellishment classes that, you know, how to pick a canvas and how to do this and how to do that. And that was a lot of fun. We wrote five books together, and then I wrote another one this year because I can't get over the somehow the need to write a book. I've even got my next book in my mind. Uh-oh, that's trouble. But I've been very fortunate because I have a printer who really is helpful to me up here, not too far away, and they store the extra books at their shop for me. So I
Ooh,
have a
that's
living room.
huge. That's huge in its own right. Yeah.
That's huge. That is huge, you know. So because you know, when you first print and you have 1,000 copies or 2,000 copies, and the boxes are just everywhere.
Yes.
So yeah. So well, you're in publishing, you know about that.
Oh,
So
yeah, that's one of our biggest issues, and something that we manage quite aggressively is because magazines will pile up because
yes.
we get a supply because we work at home and we get
Right.
a supply every month, and we do two magazines, two different publications, and it's keep one from last year and then whatever we have of the current year, and then in December, boy, it's a toss 'em, recycle bin, because yeah, it will consume you.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's really true, and that right there makes it possible made it possible for me to buy them out, and I now own the books and send the Rainbow Gallery is my distributor, and so I can just send them boxes of books, but they take up so much room, you know,
Yes.
so I'm always so happy to sell some. And when I talk about writing another book, Michael says, Carol, you're crazy. You don't have room for the books you've got. But I liked writing the book. I feel like I'm 68 years old now. I like the idea. I have a lot of little bitsy pieces of knowledge from being from teaching all those many. I taught for 20, 25 years, and from taking all those classes and stuff. And I feel like I want to pass them on. And part of working with Needlepoint Nation brings that people will ask a question like, "How do I tie off at the end of a row?" Of an open in an open work pattern. Well, you know, I know exactly how to do that, and I can write an answer to them right there. But I really like to have books that have all that in it, so that when I'm gone, they can look back and say, "Ooh, she knew everything." But
Yeah.
which, of course, I don't. But the last book I wrote is called "Just in the Nick of Time," and I people said they wanted they rather than just having the stitch, they wanted to know where to use it. So picked up a bunch of stitches, and then I would write a couple of paragraphs about this stitch makes a great carrot, you know, or this stitch makes a great sky, or try this in two colors, you know. And one of the things in that book that's most important is I told them you can turn the book sideways, and you've got a whole nother stitch, and I don't charge extra for that. You know, because a lot of, you know, and people look at the stitch and say, well, that goes from upper left to lower right, and that's not right. And then you go, well, turn it. You can, so most of the stitches will do that really well. But so
So
that's.
okay, so that book right there, because I have a couple of painted canvases that I stare at every now and then and think, well, what stitch would I use here and there? Because I really love the charted stuff. I just
Yeah.
do. So, and what would I and I keep wanting to tackle those, and I've never sat down and said, oh, this stitch here and gotten any momentum. So that kind of a
I
that.
recommend against doing it that way. I think you should start, and I think you should take a canvas. Let's say it's a canvas of cats on a fence. Okay, I'm making this up, but still, and you find the thing that's your focal point, the most important thing on the piece. If the cat, if you're buying that canvas because you like cats, then you do the cats first, and you get all the cats looking. Then you can worry about the fence. You can't decide everything before you start because you don't know how the cats are going to look. Or,
Okay.
and you know, so people try to pick up a canvas, perhaps a Charlie Harper canvas, really complicated, and they think they need to know every stitch before they start, and you really don't. You just need to have a starting place, and I like that. I like that to be the focal point, the center of attention, or whatever it is that made you buy it. If it's my husband works for the University of Texas. So suppose it was a University of Texas scene and they have that tower. That tower is going to be the center of it. And so you make that look really good and then you work out from there.
Okay. So, all right. Now that changes my thinking. It's not so overwhelming now.
Well, I think that, and that's when I see people, you know, they get, I just don't even know where to start. And well, why did you buy this canvas? Well, I just love that red rose. Well, let's start on the red rose.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, you start on something that is the thing you want people to see when they're done, you know, and everything else kind of moves out from there. Plus which, if you have that red rose in the center that you really, really like, if it doesn't look good, you can quit early. Because there is no law that says you absolutely have to finish every piece. You know, so you can set it aside. But, you know, if you get whatever it was that attracted you to that canvas, if you can get that part of it done, then the rest of it's going to fall right into place.
Okay. Because I am determined to do those. When I do them, I'm determined to do them without someone else's stitch guide.
I think that's very wise. Stitch guides are lovely, but it's somebody else's vision.
Right.
And they may not have even stitched the canvas.
To me, that's a, you know, if I do someone else's stitch guide, then I might as well just go do a charted thing.
That's exactly right. I agree with you.
Yeah. So I
have written a couple of, Michael and I did a couple of canvas stitch guides together, but we sold the canvas and the threads with it. And we decided that just wasn't really what we preferred. We like to get a piece, and even with counted pieces, it doesn't have to be exactly, except for my pieces, of course.
Of course.
It doesn't have to be exactly what's charted there. If you don't like one of the threads or you don't like how close together something is, you can change it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm not opposed to doing that and
except
have.
Except of course.
Yeah. But I just want if I do a painted canvas, I want it to be good or bad. I want it to be something that it came out of my head. So
I agree. I totally agree. And I think that too many people are looking, they think that there's only one right way to do a canvas. And that's just not true. There's probably 20 right ways to do a canvas, any particular canvas. And if you look back at different people doing stitch guides for various canvases, they all look great and they're all different.
Yeah.
But so what comes out of your head is what's important.
Yeah. So take that, Jane Wood. There. Now I have something to start. She's been bugging me to do a painted canvas. So now I've got a starting place, Jane. So buckle up. Yeah.
I love Jane. Jane is one of my oldest friends. That's how I ended up helping her on Needlepoint Nation. But one of the things you need to look at when you start on that canvas, if you get to a point where you absolutely just don't know what to do, you can go to some place like Facebook and put a little picture and say, does anybody have any ideas?
Yeah.
You know, and then you pick from the ideas.
Yep. Okay. Thank you. Very well done. Well played. Thank you. And then, you know, that whole
painted canvas to stitch?
Pardon me?
I'll send you some painted canvases to stitch.
Okay. All right. I'm open. And that whole, you know, that Needlepoint Nation, that is one of the most fascinating stories, because that was if I have it right, Jane Wood started that as a family thing to
and I think it was in 2011 and or something. It's been a good while. She just didn't think people would sign up, and we get 40 people a day. You know, because that's the part I'm in charge of, is going and making sure we're getting people who actually stitch, as opposed to when you have the word needle, we do get people who are tattoo artists they're something else, you know, different kinds of needles. So we kind of check people before they come in, but that's my job. And I thought I would know everybody, but it's amazing. All these new names, because I thought I would know everybody who needlepointed, and I didn't. 12,000 people.
Yeah, that's from something that was just more of a private thing than anything, and it's just a great group. Well, that's what I've enjoyed about the needlework online community in general, is just very supportive across the board. And
yes,
I mean there are instances, there's no doubt, and you guys I'm sure zap out a lot of them, but
no.
But it really is supportive, and it's like the other day somebody was looking for some Rainbow Gallery thread. I forget what it was.
And, yeah, that's been out of print forever. Yeah.
And before you knew it, yeah, here's some. I got it. I'll send it to you. And that's just great.
That's just great. And people do that all the time. You know, they're out of a dye lot. Although my advice is to buy twice as much as you think you're going to need every single time. But they have a dye lot, need a specific dye lot. And shop owners from all over the United States will go and look. People go look in their stashes. You know, you're going to find it.
Yeah.
It's really a nice community. You know, and I talk to some of the people off and on, and it's just really nice to know who they are. You know, of course, Needlepoint Nation is mostly painted canvas, although there's some counted canvas. And then there's another group called Counted Canvas Needlework that, you know, is more for the counted people. And then there's Needlepointers, and, you know, there's another Needlepoint Nation somewhere. And, you know, you just all these different groups.
Yeah,
but our group. I really like Needlepoint Nation. And Jane Wood is a fantastic person to work with.
Well, I would imagine that. Yes. Yeah. She's every communication I have with her is thoroughly enjoyable. So yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's just a nice, genuinely nice person.
Yeah.
Unlike me, I'm mean, but but online is the wave of the future. I really think that, you know, there are more classes online. Sandy Arthur teaches classes online. And uses Facebook groups. There's just a whole lot of things going on, and people can do them from their homes. So sometimes that's just a better thing.
Well, and that's the thing where it's not unusual for store owners to complain about online.
Yeah.
But
yes.
But the ones that are, I'm going to get myself in trouble for saying this, but I think by and far the ones that are successful are the ones that have embraced online.
Yes,
they'll ship anywhere. They dive in because lots of discussions about does this hobby have any future? Well, probably not with the old standard approach. But if you look at things like FlossTube. And, you know, Needlepoint Nation is a classic example, 12,000 people all doing needlepoint and adding 40 a day, you know.
We have more men than you would think as well.
Yes, that's been comforting.
Well, I was surprised at first at the, you know, getting, we probably get 20 or 30 women for every one man, but the men are excellent stitchers. And we're awfully glad to have them because sometimes they have a different viewpoint once they get comfortable about commenting, because there really are a lot of women, but still, but I think the online is the wave of the future, but the shop here in Austin is called the Needleworks, and she has a fabulous website and they will ship to anyone.
Right.
You know, and see, it's like she's embraced both ends. You love to go in and there are threads all over the walls and things like that. And millions of canvases of which I do not need any, but she's also got a web presence.
Yes.
And, you know, and there are tons of other shops that do that as well. And I think they're the ones that are, you know, they are the ones that are moving needlepoint into the future.
But, oh, without a doubt. And it's the way to reach the audience. And with so many stores closing, there are so many people who do not have a shop that they can drive to in half an hour.
There are people who do not have a shop within 1,000 miles.
Right.
Look, what if you live in North Dakota? I mean, you know, they just don't have that. So, you know, when people comment, well, you can find this online at somewhere or other, and they say, oh, you should shop at your local shop. And you're like, my local shop is, you know, somewhere in California, you know, that's hard, and they will ship. But Amazon has, I think, changed people's attitude toward buying online.
Yes.
You know, because the first place I think of to go for, well, maybe not needlepoint, but the first, if I need a door hanger or something like that, I go to Amazon.
Right.
You know, I wish I'd bought stock.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, you're not alone there.
But you can find a lot of things on, you can, we, I, one of the things that happens when people join Needlepoint Nation is we ask them where they shop for needlepoint. And a remarkable number say that they shop online. And I think that they may not have found a shop near them, or there just aren't any. But we had an announcement of a new shop today, and good, I forgot, but it's on there somewhere. And I thought that's great, because that's really the way to, you know, a new shop is the just like having a new baby. It's right. Our favorite thing. You know, we have wonderful shop owners.
Well, and I'm fortunate here in the Chicago area. I have Welcome Stitchery 20 minutes from me, and an excellent shop, and then a whole bunch more that are within an hour, hour and a half tops. And so I can, you know, I'm fortunate. But now take Christine out on Long Island; she's got nothing. And it wasn't until she explored New York City in general, there really isn't anything there. You'd think there'd be 20 shops in New York City and in the surrounding boroughs.
There are a couple in New York City, Annie's and Lord Mercy, I forgot the name of the other one. But I went to New York one time and they were tiny little places on like on the second floor and then the Edwardian Needle in New Jersey and more in New Jersey. I shouldn't even be mentioning shop names because I live in Texas and I can name you the shops in Texas, but you know. They're down the street and up in Dallas and so forth, some really nice shops. Texas is a real a place for needle workers in general. Lots of people stitch here.
Yeah, it seems to be a mecca there. And then out in California, there seems to be an awful lot, too, of shops. But then you take, you know, your reproduction samplers and your cross stitching, and you end up at the Attic in Phoenix and all. Well, there's four or five shops in Phoenix. I love going there.
Yeah,
that's dangerous.
It is dangerous, and they had just had a shop hop for the four shops, I believe, in the Dallas, Fort Worth, and Cleburne area, and people and Raymond Crawford did a canvas for them. And
oh, really?
I didn't get to go. You know, and people came down from all over the place.
Oh, that'd be fun to do a shop hop like that, you know. When you do your designing, I'm just fascinated by you people who design. Do you stitch it first? Do you draw it out first? How do you go about that?
I like to have an idea of what the outline is going to look like, but I stitch first.
Okay.
And a lot of times I change my mind as I go. But I try to decide what the center is going to be like. There's that focal point thing again. Mm-hmm. And try and get that in there and then work out from there. The Anasazi song piece that you were talking about, I did that motif in the middle first and then decided where to go from there. I'm not much of a... I know some people really draw and work on and put a little... tell where they're going to put what and that kind of thing. And I'm really more of a stitcher first. You know, in fact, I'm a thread hog first. I go and get all the threads and have them in a big bag. And then I go buy more threads and then have to have a big bag of threads. And then before I even start, you know, and I have a huge mess of canvas, you know, because I might change my mind about what color I want to put it on. Color 18 count canvas. But if you start with green, what if you change your mind and want to do blue? You got to have some blue.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually a bad example when it comes to thread. My name is Carol and I have way too much thread. You know, because when people put on there that they're looking for such and such a rather dialogue of something, I altogether too often have some.
Yeah. Well, that was fun the other day because I was working when that popped up. And I was working, but I actually was taking a mental break and went to Needlepoint Nation and that popped up and I thought, oh, I bet I have some downstairs, but I'd have to go down and sort it. And I didn't have time. And I knew by the time I got back to it, that three different people would have it. And sure enough, they did. So,
yeah, nope. My local chapter of ANG is very active and sometimes they have meetings here because I'm kind of centrally located. And when they come, two or three people will go upstairs and see what I've got new in threads. You know, I just like to have one of every color. I really like pepper pot silk. That's kind of my new favorite.
Oh, talk to me. Oh, I did a Gay Ann Rogers Lady Edith piece. The first time I'd run into pepper pot silk. Holy smokes, is that nice stuff or what?
Oh, I love pepper pot silk.
Man. Yeah.
So I have I have one of every, I will actually have two of every color, but I've used some of the second ones, but I like to keep them. I have them all. I have a nice little drawer for them where they're happy. Happy little pepper pots. Love pepper pot silk.
So what design did you use them in? I'm buying it because I've not found anything to stitch with that uses pepper pots since that Gay Ann Rogers one.
Oh, well, give me some time. This is one that hasn't come out yet.
Okay. All right.
And when Michael retired, I had to take some time to readjust myself because I don't have him to tell me what I'm doing wrong anymore. He's a fabulous designer. He really is. And it was wonderful working with him. But, you know, when you're going to retire, you're going to retire.
Yeah. Well, that to have that back and forth sounding board thing when you're designing is got to be
really good. Yeah.
It's stimulating, I would think, too. Yeah.
And some of the other teachers are good friends. And, you know, sometimes I'll shoot them a picture and say, well, what do you think? And they'll tell you if the blue is too bright, or sometimes if you're looking at, this goes with your painted canvases too. If you're looking at it and it's bothering you, something's wrong. Stop and figure out what it is before you stitch anymore. You know, you see people and, you know, I hate ripping out, you know, so I'd really rather, you know, so if something starts looking wrong, I try to ask somebody or get somebody else to look at it because I'm too close. And that's what I tell people, that when they say, I just don't know what's wrong with this, you back up from it, back way up from it, and see if it maybe it looks okay. But it's scary. But yeah, I've got a couple of pieces on the drawing board, and I might write another book if Michael doesn't talk me out of it, and if I can find a place to store the boxes.
Yes.
But that's what I'm doing. But it's really strange not to be traveling and teaching at all the different seminars, you know, and I miss seeing a lot of the people that I saw all the time. But
that teaching stimulates too.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Sometimes somebody will change one little thing on a piece and you go, that's so much better. I wish I'd thought of that. You know, I'm always surprised when somebody says, well, don't you think so-and-so will mind if I change this? I'm like, no, they won't mind at all because it makes it better.
Right.
You know, so I really like that. So
yeah, no, and that's I'm originally a science teacher, and now doing magazines. To me, that's just teaching. That's just to a degree, but it's just teaching a different audience through a different medium. In my view, and I think that's what I love about doing magazines is sharing knowledge every month.
Yes. 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 That's that, but don't tempt me into magazines because I'm just doing a book takes me a whole year.
Yeah.
Because but I love being able to put all these little bitsy tips and tricks out for people, because sometimes when you've been doing this as long as I have, sometimes I just know something because I've made that mistake before. You know, it's not because I'm so smart; it's because I've screwed up, and I fixed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But. At any rate, but.
Well, that's the thing. To me, that's the thing. That's what I look for. And Debbie Raleigh and I have talked about this more than once. And I think she's at least done some thought about putting together a class. And that's, I would call the class the little things. Those little tricks and little tips that make
tips
a big.
And tricks.
Yeah, they make a big difference. But you might only encounter a need once or twice on a given project, but all together they're powerful, a bunch of little things to know. You know,
and that would be a great thing for her to do, because especially since she's still out teaching and she does so many pieces, you know, sometimes it's just something just as little as how to tie off in an open area where you can't tie off behind.
Right.
You know, and. Yeah. You know, you may just not have thought of something that I figured out because the thread was showing through.
Yeah. So. Well, in little details, like for instance, on the Anasazi song there, the darning stitch over the under and over the krynek that are on the sides there. I stopped a thread because I thought it was getting a little frayed. I stopped a thread mid-row and started another one.
Oops.
And yeah. and I didn't tear it out, which is unusual for me. Normally I would tear it out. I didn't tear it out, but because now I have those two holes that are actually open because I started it there, and where all the others, because the thread is going all the way across, they're all filled and the color fills in, and it's going to bug me forever on that. And now that I talk about it,
You should go take it out.
Yeah, I should.
but you know, it's one of the things that happens in counted pieces, especially the ones that I've designed. And then Gene Hilton used to stitch with, you know, yard long lengths. And that's so you don't run out. And people are afraid to stitch with long lengths. And sometimes that's just the best way to do it. You can always cut it off.
Yeah,
but of course, I'm the person that has 17 of each color that I'm going to use because I'm a thread hog. You never do too much thread.
Well, that just to do the double fan doubled there, that what some 72 inches worth of.
Yeah, that's exactly right. But if you try to do it with shorter lengths.
No way. No.
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 You know, and I had the experience when I taught that piece a number of times, and people wouldn't do it. They didn't really believe you. You know, I'd write it down. I'd say, you need to cut, you know, this much. And then they do a little one, and then there they'd be.
Right.
You know, sometimes it's just not something you can successfully do with shorter lengths. So my theory is if you start with a longer length, the worst that can happen is you'll have to cut it off.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so.
Oh, no, I measured those all out, great big long things, and nursed them through, and so they didn't get twisted. And. But it works because, you know, a double fan doubled with one thread, one length of thread, actually goes together easier and cleaner.
Yes, it does. And it looks better when you're done because it's all smooth.
Yes.
You know, and if, you know, and I saw yours, so I know yours are right. But if you look at it when you're done and there's twisty tangles in the middle, you need to go. This is my advice for the ages. Is if it has twisty things in the middle, then you're going to have to rip it out. But it's really easy to rip out because you can just cut, and then you cut another long length and start again.
Yep. Well, I'm after we get done here, I'm going to go down and rip out that that darning stuff. I got to fix that.
Oh, that will make me so happy.
I got to fix it. It's just because every time I sit down to that thing, that's the first thing my eyes go right to that, and I go, oh, man, I shouldn't have done that.
No.
I knew better than to end in the middle of a row, and I didn't.
Yeah. No, that's my theory, is if you can rip it out and make it right, then you might as well.
Yeah, well.
You don't want to leave it till it's framed and on the wall.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's every time I sit down, it bugs me more, so I might as well tear it out and be done with it.
So if you went upstairs in my house to the wall of shame, my early pieces, there's a Bargello piece where I cut the canvas. And I did not fix it successfully, but I just stitched over it, and it's framed, and it's upstairs, and every time I walk by it, this is something I stitched in probably 1978 or 1980, and every time I walk by it, I go, I just don't look at that corner where I cut the canvas. You know? Yeah. I know now how to fix that, but at the time, I thought if I just stitched over it, it'd be fine, and I was wrong. You know. Yeah.
And that is true. That's all you see. And 20 people could walk by and ooh and ah over it, but you can't get past that one spot. So
yeah, I took it one time to a program where I was teaching them how to put the canvas on the back to repair a cut thing. And I said, see, you can see this. And they're passing it around going, where? And I can see it every time I walk by it. So
yeah. All right. Well, I'm cutting those threads out tonight.
Okay. All right.
Doing it.
I will feel much better about that. Just think how happy you're making me.
Yeah, well, me too, because I'm just so picky about it that I'm really surprised that I even let it go. It was just one of those moments where I'm not tearing that out, and then it won't leave me alone. So, yeah. So let's talk about your books. Now, you've done, we've got Painted Canvas Embellishment, then Twisty Stitches 1 and 2, Desert Island Stitches, and then your new one, which is in...
But the new one is... Just in the Nick of Time. That's the one I wrote by myself.
Yeah.
And that explains why there's two typos in it, but don't tell anyone, okay?
Okay.
Michael said, I can't believe.
here's a comfort thing on that. My wife, I've been doing magazines for, 35 or 6 years, some ridiculous amount of time. And my wife started working with me on these two magazines we work with, 10 or 11 years ago, something like that. And when she started, she was determined that we were going to have the perfect issue.
Oh, dear.
And I told her, never. It's never going to happen. There will always be a comma missing or a comma that shouldn't be there. There will be a typo every time. And no, we're going to have the perfect issue. And it took her a while, but then, yeah, she realized it's not going to happen. So a couple of typos in a book, we'll all live.
yes. But
they'll drive you nuts, but you'll live.
So we did painted canvas embellishment first, and it was based on our the class we taught in person, the painted canvas embellishment class. And it's about half how to pick a canvas, how to get how much thread to buy. If you ask me, it's never enough, but how much thread per square inch, that kind of thing, how to decide how much thread, how to pick a canvas, how to put it on stretcher bars, all those different things. And then the other half of it is a selection of stitches organized by stitches for wings, stitches for hair, stitches for faces, stitches for walls, stitches for bricks, stitches for that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than arranged by the kind of stitch, they're arranged by what you might use them for.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And that was kind of based on the book that we did for that class, so that everybody, so you could go through and look and say, oh, and then there are little stitches and medium stitches and big stitches. And that's an interesting book, because I felt like the first part of it, at least, was my brain on paper. And complete with typos. And then Desert Island Stitches were smaller. They're the same thing, but sort of carry along books. And one of them is small stitches and the other one is borders. Because a lot of times you want to add a border in it, and it's got all those formulas in there. If you want it to be divided by 8, then you have to do this and that sort of thing. And then the twisty stitches are all the stitches like Double Fan Double and Jessica and Walnetto and things like that. They are all arranged so that you have, here's stitch one, there are many pictures. Stitch 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, so that you see how it goes together, and even a picture of what the back's supposed to look like.
Oh, and that's helpful.
Two books, because it just takes up so much space.
Yeah.
And then
that's a good idea to show the backs. That's helpful.
Yeah. Because if the back doesn't look right, it probably isn't right.
Yeah.
On those kind of stitches, anyway. And then the book I wrote myself is called Just in the Nick of Time, because it seems like to me when I'm stitching, I always get sort of to the edge and then I'm trying to think of a stitch to put somewhere. And so it's stitches for the last minute.
Okay.
and it's got words and numbers. Some people like to have their stitches with numbers. So there's numbers there. And then there's a couple of paragraphs about each one telling you different ways to use it, what kind of threads it's good for. Cause some threads are good in metallic or silk, and some threads are much better in cotton. Threads, I don't mean threads, I mean stitches.
Yeah.
Are much better in cotton and that kind of thing. And so I just dredged up what I knew. And so that was fun. I was glad to do that, because those were all big pieces of things that I'd been wanting to write down and share with people. I like this stitch because. And then I didn't put any stitches in that I didn't like. That's the nice thing about writing the book by myself. So
yeah. You can, if you do it yourself, you can put in what you want, and you get no interference. Right. That's right.
That's right. And that means I got to put in French knots and bullion knots and things like that that Michael just hates. So I got to put them in. But those are good things for stuff. So there you go. So
what is it in your teaching when you take your twisty stitches, your Gene Hilton type stuff? What is it that scares people? People seem to freak out over a lot of those, and so many of them are just not that difficult.
I think they've just never tried it.
Okay.
Maybe it's like the first time that you drive a car or something. You're just sure you're going to run into something. But I think people look at them and they look so, there are things going under and over and all that stuff, and it just looks like it's going to be hard. And then when I used to teach Anasazi Song all those years ago, I would say, this is the easiest stitch in here. And they go, oh, no, you know, and then they do it. And I said, by the time the first one's going to take you an hour, hour and a half. The second one's going to take you 45 minutes. The other two are going to take you 10 minutes each.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, because once you have the pattern down, it's easy.
Yeah. And well, and that's true, because when I started, there's four double fan doubles in that thing. And the first one, well, what I did is I just pulled out some pearl cotton and practiced on the side because it'd been so long since I did one. But even that first one took me forever because it just, oh, yeah, that's right. I got to go here and pay attention. Make sure you go under everything and over everything. And then by the fourth one is like, bang, bang, that's done. All right, move on.
That's true. You know, and so when I've gone out and done, oh, I don't know, chapter programs on top that, I tell, do four, do five, then you'll never have to practice again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true of a lot of those twisty stitches. You know, once you've done it and once it looks right, then you can easily do it again.
Right. Well, that's like the one that gets me going is the Walnetto. Yet, and it's one that if you do it again, like you said, with some frequency, it really is not difficult. But boy, if you haven't done one,
it becomes the mistake stitch.
Oh boy, yeah.
Which is really pretty, but not the right stitch.
Yeah, and that, you know, that's one where, yeah, I really have to think. I have to pay attention. TV off, you know, nothing. I got to pay attention to that one. But it's a beautiful, it's one of my favorites because it really comes out nice when you get it right.
It really does come out nice.
Yeah.
But you have to remember to come up and under and then come up in the right place. And, you know, if you miss it, but the trick I think is that if you watch it as you go, and then if it doesn't look right for any reason, stop then instead of, oh no, I'll just go on. I'm sure it's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
no.
It's better to stop soon.
Yeah, no, it's not right. And yeah, it'll be a long tear out. So just stop. Yes.
Yeah. And the thread never looks as on those kind of stitches. If you rip the thread out, it's really hard to, it goes through the canvas so many times that it's kind of dulled.
Yep. Oh yeah. Like when if I have to tear one of those out, yeah, I just throw the thread away, start over. Yeah. Cause I never, and I'm probably wasteful, but
No, not wasteful.
Well, I just, if I've dragged it through and it's not right, to pull it out and use it again, I just always feel like it's just not going to be up to snuff. So I just pitch it. And I'm with you. When I buy stuff, I'll buy what's prescribed, but a lot of times I'll go back and get more. And
yeah, because when I used to teach and I produce kits, I always put in what I thought was twice what people would need, because if you have to rip out, you have to rip out. I don't want them to use the thread again.
And that's what makes me nervous about kits and why I tend to stay away from it. I don't ever want to feel constrained. If I waste this length of thread, I'm going to come up short. I hate that.
Yes. Oh, when somebody says they had to go back in their little Ort dish and get the one last stitch.
Oh, gee, yeah.
I hate that. I like to have, I think it's better to have way too much thread than to have not enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that, you know, this Anasazi, now I'm going to go rip this thing out and I know I have plenty of thread. And, so I have no qualms about tearing it out and throwing it away and starting over. So, yeah.
Yeah. Don't use it again. Thread is the cheapest thing, I think, that you put into your needlepoint. If you put your time, is the most irreplaceable thing.
Yeah.
So there's no point in wasting your time on trying to make something look right that doesn't.
Yep. Well, there's lots of long lengths in my Ort bowl, I can tell you that. Lots of them.
Mine too. One of the girls in my chapter makes Christmas ornaments out of them. She puts all the Orts in, and she has a Christmas ball on her tree that's called Anasazi because it's all the Orts from when I did the three pieces. I saved them for her specially.
Excellent. Excellent. I've one thing that I'd put on our list to talk about that has kind of bothered me lately is the comment that needlepoint is too expensive.
It doesn't seem like it to me, but yeah. I guess it's how much money you have. It's an expensive hobby. It's an expensive hobby, particularly if you're buying painted canvases.
Yeah.
Counted as less expensive.
Yeah, but and I guess that was where I was going with it is that, it is expensive, but it doesn't have to be.
I don't think it has to be.
Yeah.
You know, the problem is, at least for somebody like me, is the compulsion to buy it all.
Yes.
But yeah, it probably is, particularly for people starting out, young families, and that, you know, some of the things that we do are that you see, you know, a big Melissa Shirley canvas and, you know, all these fine silk threads. It probably is too expensive, but you can choose what you want to do.
Right.
You know.
Well, and that's, you know, that's just it. Because I look at, all right, say I want to try needlepoint. There's plenty of free counted charts that people have put together. 4 and 5 and 6 inch square counted charts that you can do with just 2 or 3 different threads. So it's not horribly expensive. And
yeah. I've got some free charts on my StitchPlay website with just that thought in mind.
Yeah. And I think sometimes, and I'm guilty as the next person, we get trapped, all caught up in the, what Christine and I call the infrastructure.
Yes.
And so much of that, yeah, it helps, all of it. I mean, it all helps. But when you get down to brass tacks, you can certainly do without it. And,
yeah,
you know, in terms of expense, you know, it should not be a barrier. And
it should not be a barrier. I think, unfortunately, sometimes it is, but it shouldn't be. And I think there are ways to do it less expensively. You can get free charts and do counted work is generally less expensive, I think, than some of the painted canvases. But sometimes you see a painted canvas and you just fall in love with it.
Yes.
And, you know, yeah, I know this happened to me. And maybe you can just have one at a time. Or, you know, maybe you can have 12 at a time, but, you know.
But, well, you know, it's, you know, that's the other thing. Is the cost of a canvas and threads, and then the number of hours of enjoyment you get out of it.
It's cheaper than going on a cruise.
Yes. No doubt about that. Unless you're going on a stitching cruise, and then, yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go. Yeah, you know, I think that you just have to think about what it is, and, you know, and you don't want, when I tell people, I talk to them about picking a canvas, if a canvas is sitting there on the wall of the shop or on the internet or whatever, and you just love it, I mean, you just fall in love with it, then that's the one you should buy. If you're looking at it and think, well, you know, if I change this or change that, maybe that's not the one to buy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe, you know, you kind of have to give it some thought. You know, if you look at it and say, well, that wouldn't go in my house, that's probably a sign you shouldn't buy it.
Yeah.
But if you see one and you just fall in love, you know, then sometimes it's just meant to be. And you don't have to buy all the threads at once. You can buy a little bit of this thread and a little bit of that thread and kind of get started and then go buy some other thread. That's probably a more economical way to do it.
Yeah.
Because you may change your mind about what thread you want as you go.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, and then you go, oh, I shouldn't have spent that. Yeah. Okay. The selfish one before we run out of time. Selfish one for me. Talk to me. I have never used them. Evertight bars. You're a big fan.
I love Evertight bars. I love Evertight bars. But there's no reason you can't stitch on regular bars. The difference is, to me, I think, and I started using Evertight bars. I actually had a bar in my suitcase, and I was carrying around something I was trying to finish, and one of the bars broke. And I was staying at somebody's house to teach a class, and she had Evertights. And I put that piece on Evertights, and I can see the difference when the stitching that I did on the regular bars and the stitching that I did after I put them onto Evertights, because it holds it so taut. And yes, they're more expensive. That's
Back up. There's that much difference in how tight the canvas is.
Yes.
And you're tacking the canvas to the bars.
Well, I use staples, but yeah.
Whoa.
I like to use staples. I never did like tacks. I always drop them on the floor and step on them.
Oh.
But and things can, I know some people, that's just a personal preference thing. But yeah, I put it on the bars. You never have to take it off because you can tighten it using the little screw gadgets at the end of the bars. And I should know the. And you use a, the tool that you use is a, I've lost the word.
Allen wrench.
Yeah, an Allen wrench.
Yeah,
it was named after somebody.
Yeah.
And a little 3/32 Allen wrench. And you tighten it in each corner, like one twist, and the whole canvas is taut. And I have found that it just makes a difference. It makes a difference in my stitching. Maybe it doesn't in everybody's, but it makes a difference in my stitching. And if you were here, I could show you that. Well, it's embarrassing, but I could show you that piece where I got about 2/3 of the way through, and I was working from the top to the bottom, and then I switched to the Evertide bars, and the stitching just looks better. You know, it's one of those things that you probably would walk by and maybe not notice, but I notice it because I bought a lot of Evertides right then.
Well, see, that's okay. Now, and I hate that because now I got to go get some Evertide bars, but like Anna Sansi's song. Now, you know how when you start out and it's nice and taut, and then as you work the canvas, it starts to get a little saggy in the middle. And I'm about to the point now where I got to pull it off and re-tack it to get it tight enough.
And you never have to do that with Evertides.
Yeah.
Never. And it to me, it makes a huge difference. But they are, you know, people, oh, but they're so expensive. Well, there are lots of things in the needlepoint business that are expensive. I just happen to think they're worth the difference in my stitching. And I'm not... this is the wrong thing to say at the end of an interview, but I'm not the world's greatest stitcher. I don't lay threads. Ask Michael. He'll tell you. I don't lay threads. I lay threads as perfectly as anybody else, but my stitching looks so much better when I do it on Evertides that I can see the difference. Hmm. And because it's the canvas itself is taut the whole time. And if it starts getting loose, you just tighten it up. You don't have to take it off. I think they're fabulous. But, you know, again, it's one of those personal taste things.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I don't use them on small pieces, like a 6x6.
Mm-hmm.
The smallest I might use them on is 8x8s and maybe even 10x10s because they're big bars and they are heavier, you know, but I use them. I have a Lowry frame and I use them on my Lowry frame. And for those little things like a Christmas ornament, maybe not. But for big things like my Russian church pieces, I think it made a huge difference. And I used them on my Anna Sansi song too. Ha ha.
Okay, so all right.
Your writing thing would look just fine if you were using Evertides.
Okay.
Well, that's that, and this is a personal opinion thing. I saw the difference in my stitching, and I immediately switched over. Because I needed my stitching to look good because it was a professional thing.
Right.
You know, I mean, I just don't lay threads as well, silk and things like that, as well as some other people. And it just made that much difference.
All right.
So I really like them. And I really have a lot of them. You know, but I don't think I don't think I would, like, say longer than 20 inches. I know people do pieces. I have a friend who's doing a Charlie Harper piece that, like, she's got 30 inches on one side and 15 on the other. Whew! You know, I don't think I could do that. I think I would have to roll it or put it on a roller of some sort.
Yeah, that's got to go on a scroll. Yeah.
But there you go. But I do like them and I do recommend them. And when Michael and I were teaching online classes, we... sent them out with our kits because we felt like it made the pieces look better.
Oh, you feel that strongly about them that you actually include them in the kit. Oh, my.
Yeah. We do. But they're a little bit harder to find, and sometimes people are out, and the guy that puts them together is not the fastest person in the world, but I love him dearly because when I've been in a tight place and I've got to have these right now, he takes care of me, so that's good.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, eventually I collected enough so that I have some of every size.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but
that happens.
You know, but the little, the smaller bar, there's nothing wrong with stitching on the regular bars, but you do need to retighten your work. Maybe not every time you sit down to stitch, but certainly every other time.
Yeah. Well, I don't do it that frequently, but there is a point where the canvas is starting to have a little more give than I can stand. And
right. And that's when you need to tighten it up. And I think what I really like is not having to tighten it up. you know, or if I tighten it up, I just use the little Allen wrench thing and it just pulls it out. And you can, there are other, you know, you can do that with the smaller bars by going into the backside and tapping the bars. This is probably not going to show up well. I'm doing a motion here with my hands and you can't see it, but you tap, tap the bars so that the bars are wider apart.
Uh-huh.
This is using regular bars.
Okay.
And that will tighten your canvas.
Okay.
Did that make sense at all?
Yeah. Yeah. Just separate them. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's because you know, once it gets, and that way you don't have to take all the tacks or staples or whatever out. Right.
Now see, and I can't do that because I think it was Curdy Biggs that said about putting angle brackets on the backs to hold to hold it square. So I do that.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. You can't do that. No. I mean, you can't do that tapping.
No.
You know, but if you're using the brackets on the back, you might like the Evertights. But see, if you're happy, you know, I hate to tell people what to do, because if they're happy with what they're doing, then, you know, who am I to tell them to go out and buy $18 bars?
Yeah. Well, it's a convenience thing. And because, I mean, I'm going to have to literally pull all the tacks and start all over and make sure it's on there square and all those things. But
And the tacks are easier to pull out than staples.
Yeah. That's why I don't use staples, is because I can get the tacks out. Yeah.
Yeah, but I use an arrow stapler with quarter inch staples, quarter inch leg staples, and they're easier to get out. If you put the really long staples or use a swing line with those really long staples, I'm sitting here making hand motions. I don't think I can talk very well.
They're working. I can feel the wind as you go by. Yeah, so I can tell exactly what you're doing. It's very, very effective. Yes.
You're going to have to cut this part out when you edit.
No, that's not coming out.
The staples are, they have ones that are quarter inch legs, and they go into the wood a lot more easily and stay in better than the really long ones.
Oh, okay.
You know, well, try it sometime.
I believe you.
You're a pack user.
I'm going to stick with tacks, but I believe you.
What do you use? Do you use brass tacks or quilt tacks?
Brass.
Brass? Yeah. They're nice.
The brass ones that bend, and I throw them away. Yeah, I just have a whole lot of them.
Yes, I think that's when I switched over the stapler, when I had a handful of tacks that came out of a piece, and I just went, ah! And I went out to the garage and got my husband's swing line stapler and discovered that wasn't going to work. So I went to the hardware store and said, and told them what I needed, and they gave me this arrow stapler, JT21, and I've used it ever since. It's fabulous.
Carol Lake's signature AT21 arrow stapler. There we have it. Your picture's right on the package, right?
I will.
Excellent.
Just what you needed.
Yep. All right, Carol, we're going to end it right here on the Carol
before
Lake endorsed stapler.
Say anything silly again? Okay. Thank you very much for asking me to be on your podcast.
Well, thanks for
I'm
doing it.
I'm very flattered.
Thanks for doing it. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Okay. Well, tell Christine I was sorry to miss her. And if I think up anything else to say, I'll be sure and email her.
Oh, we'll just get you back and do another show when she's here.
Okay.
That's how it'll work.
That.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody for listening. And thank you, Carol.